And the guy was like repeating over and over. It's like, we have to warn everybody. We have to warn everybody. He believed he had just seen three bodies, dead, mangled, torn to pieces. He started to say something loud and was shushed. And then he said, I'm telling you, man, a Bigfoot killed those guys.
That's a clip from the gripping Hulu docuseries Sasquatch. The series starts out as a ghost story, but then it subtly shapeshifts and becomes a true crime documentary. You could say that the people behind this documentary have invented a new kind of genre. And because of this innovation, Sasquatch grabs the viewer's attention and holds it. That's no small feat in this attention economy in which we now live. Joshua Rofe is the director of Sasquatch. He joined us to talk about the dangers involved in filming in the lawless woods of Northern California and how exactly he got involved in this mythical project.
In February 2018, a buddy of mine, his name's Zach Kreger, he's one of the executive producers on this show, actually, he had mentioned a podcast that he thought I should listen to, which is called Sasquatch Chronicles. And Sasquatch Chronicles is people calling up with their Sasquatch encounter stories. And so, and to be honest with you, I wasn't interested when he mentioned that, but he pushed, and so I listened to an episode.
Was it a person or an animal or?
I can't tell. All I know is that my sensor light came on, and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard, a good-sized man or something. It looks like a man. I don't know what it was, just that it ran across the yard.
Okay. You've had problems in the neighborhood?
And then cut to 4 days later, and I'd listened to 11 episodes. And what I was really struck by was what I perceived as authentic, visceral fear that was being expressed and experienced by these people who were calling in with their Sasquatch encounter stories. For the next week, I sort of just had a conversation with myself, which essentially consisted of convincing myself that my next project was going to be Sasquatch-centric in some way. And by the end of the week, what I'd arrived at was that if I could find a murder mystery that was somehow wrapped up in a Sasquatch story, then I could really be onto something special. I did what you would do if you were me, which is I reached out to my friend David Holthaus. And I say that because David is my friend and colleague who has been a gonzo journalist and investigative journalist for over 25 years. He's the guy to reach out to if you're looking for a wild story. I sent him a text, and the text literally said, hey, this is the craziest text I'm going to send you for the next 5 years. I want to find a murder mystery that is somehow wrapped up in a Sasquatch story. And if it exists, pursue it as the next project. And he wrote me right back and he said, I love it. I got one. I'll call you in five.
Can you tell us quickly what the story was that David told you?
Yeah, sure. So the story that he then proceeded to tell me was in the fall of 1993, he was a young gonzo journalist who was burning it at both ends, learning the hard way that not everybody gets to be Hunter S. Thompson, and he needed to escape his current set of circumstances. And so he reached out to a friend of his who was working on a cannabis farm in Northern California, and that friend invited him out to get away. And so when David got there, you know, he thought he was going to be arriving at a pretty mellow, relaxing, you know, location to let things calm down for a week. And it was a terrifying energy that was in the air from the moment he arrived. And David's second night there, he was in an A-frame cabin that was owned by this cannabis farm owner. And there was a phone call.
The conversation's a little tense. I mean, I remember him saying, like, you guys on a run? Have you got everything sorted? You know, he's like, okay, okay. And he's like, all right, but keep him mellow. You got to keep him mellow. About 15, 20 minutes later, see headlights of a truck outside. These two guys come in. They're soaked. They're muddy. And one of them was talking a mile a minute. His eyes are like the eyes of a panicked horse. You know, they're rolling around. I was sketched out enough by this guy's presence that I was just kind of trying to become one with the couch.
They were terrified, they were exasperated, and they said that further up the mountain, there were three people who had been murdered, and all the eyewitnesses had the same account, and that was that they had been torn limb from limb by a Sasquatch. And so this was a story that young 23-year-old Gonzo journalist David Holthaus heard in 1993, and he had certainly never forgotten it, but it just seemed it was too absurd to take to bring to any editors at any of the papers that he worked for. But then when I came knocking and sort of, you know, that was, you know, really sort of, you know, reawoken within him, you know, both he and I knew that we wanted to pursue it.
Yeah, it was like kismet for sure. A lot of the myth of Bigfoot is focused in Northern California, specifically this area, these three counties known as the Emerald Triangle. What is it about this area that sustains the legend of Bigfoot?
I think it's the woods out there. I think it's the forest. I mean, when you're out in those woods, it feels prehistoric. And you get a few miles deep in those woods and you forget what life is like back in the city or the suburbs. It's transportive. It really is. And so I think if you're out in the woods and you want to find something, that's a place where you can really sort of lose yourself. Everything about that setting lends itself to the folklore.
I mean, someone doesn't have to be an amphetamine addict to have been out in the woods maybe too long and been traumatized by being out there and fearing for their lives. I feel like all the Sasquatch stories I ever heard emanates from that traumatic feeling of like, I might not belong here and something is gonna take me out.
Yeah, this area is also extremely dangerous and has this very sordid history of genocide, racism, and murder. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, those were really interesting discoveries and chilling discoveries to make along the way. We set out to pursue really the source, the origin point of this Sasquatch murder mystery, and we didn't realize how dangerous things were going to get.
Now, private investigator that I hired kind of disappeared for a couple weeks. And then he just came across with this text that was like, A, saying that he quit, and B, like, you are venturing into dangerous territory with this investigation. He won't return my phone calls, he won't return my texts, he won't answer my emails, like, nothing.
The criminal element there, the underworld, those woods that I mentioned a second ago, this criminal element is so pervasive in those woods, and it's pretty lawless. There are not enough police officers, law enforcement agents to corral or control what's going on out there. It's the Wild West. It really is. You start to go further up the mountain in certain areas and there's nobody to keep the peace. It's the locals who lay down what the law is. And if somebody feels that you've crossed them in any way or done something that is not acceptable according to the way things work up there, you're going to get killed and nobody's even going to know where to look for you.
Yeah, and the epicenter of within the Emerald Triangle, the epicenter of all this violence and danger and lawlessness seems to be this area called Spy Rock Road. Can you tell us a bit about Spy Rock Road?
Yes, I mean, Spy Rock was a place that once we started talking to locals or people who had lived there previously or just done any research, you know, even online, it became clear that Spy Rock's a pretty lawless place and outsiders are not welcome. It's not the place to just go wandering up searching for information. But then, of course, that's exactly what we did, and David Holthaus specifically.
Would Spy Rock be a dangerous place for my crew and I to just like go and start trying to get interviews?
I definitely wouldn't advise you go up to Spy Rock trying to figure anything out unless you have an invitation. Spy Rock's the kind of place where it's not really a good idea to go ride around asking questions.
How has the government over the years dealt with all the lawlessness in the Emerald Triangle?
The war on drugs was really in full steam in the early 80s through the early 90s.
This week, law enforcement authorities have moved into Humboldt County in a major raid to begin chopping down and clearing out the clandestine croplands.
And so, you know, the government was very much trying to dictate how things were going to go out there. But as time has gone on, I think it's just a place that it polices itself. And I know at least local law enforcement, I mean, some of them even said in our show that there's only so much they can do.
We probably have more bodies than we could even count right now up in the hills.
A lot of unreported murders.
Oh, I'm sure there are. You know, a lot of unsolved, it's pretty bad. And it's not because we're not trying, it's because we don't have the cooperation from the community on a lot of them. Especially with marijuana grows, you know, who's going to be willing to talk to us?
It's not as though this is a place where there's roads with names and, you know, make a left on this and a right on this, and then you'll get to the area where that dead body might be. It's make a left at that tree stump, go 300 yards. There are no roads at a certain point. It's just sort of these dirt pathways that you got to have the right vehicle. You wouldn't even know where to look. You wouldn't even know how to get there, even if you were told.
Were you and David and the rest of the crew ever concerned for your safety?
Always, actually. Except when we were filming with the people from the Sasquatch community or some of the people who had previously lived in that area when they wanted to just get off the grid and get back to the land. Filming with all those folks was totally safe, and they were all really wonderful, warm, welcoming people. But when we were exploring, you know, the other and really larger element of this series, which was this sort of backwoods underworld, we were constantly aware of the fact that we were not safe and that we were already overstaying our welcome just by way of setting foot there.
I mean, look, with these kinds of investigations, I'm still alive because I do a constant risk analysis, okay? And my risk analysis in regards to this individual is don't put his name out in the public. It's not worth the risk. So as far as I'm concerned, he's alleged killer only, and alleged killer he will remain.
On top of that, there were experiences David had where, you know, no camera could go with him. I couldn't go with him. Nobody can go with him. And it's just him going to meet with a new source who potentially has information about this alleged triple homicide. And locations get changed on David. People are pressuring him to get in cars to go drive in the middle of the night 3 hours away to some random cabin in the woods. It was harrowing at times. It was crazy.
Do you have concerns about your safety now that the series is finished and public?
No. I think we did a good job of concealing certain identities that could put people at risk potentially, and I don't think we're thinking about that much.
Yeah. Do you think your series could help get to the bottom of this 1993 triple murder?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, the culture up there really is one of silence. But it is possible that things will get shaken up. I'm not saying it's likely, but I think anything's possible.
There is this elusive truth that I glimpsed, you know, through the trees. And it's like the same obsession that drives squatchers to spend half their lives in the woods. They do it because they're obsessed. They're convinced that they're always just one step away from getting the proof they need, right? Am I just doing the same shit? Am I just like out there running around the woods, like convinced that I'm just one move away from like really cracking this case and being able to explain exactly what happened in 1993?
One of the most intriguing things I thought about your documentary is the docuseries is that you're kind of inventing a new genre, the way you're marrying the ghost story and true crime. It's kind of like you've created your own niche genre. What do you think?
Oh, well, wow, that was that's amazing to hear. Thank you. It is funny because we used to say to each other when we were starting out, we're chasing a ghost story. We're investigating a ghost story. And that, at times, that just leaves you feeling like you're getting nowhere. But then all of a sudden, when you start to have breakthroughs 6 months, 8 months, a year into the investigation, suddenly you start to have this experience where you realize that if you dig at a ghost story, not all of them, but it's got to be the right one, obviously, and tough to identify that ahead of time even. But if you dig at a ghost story for long enough, you might actually get to something that is even scarier and wilder than you anticipated. And I know that's what our experience was making this. And so, I mean, I hope that people can have even sort of half of that experience watching it.
Joshua Roffe is the director of the Hulu docuseries Sasquatch. You can find out more about Joshua and Sasquatch at WPR.org/beta.
And this started us on a whole quest, really, to blend more British traditional music with contemporary instruments, with electric instruments.
Coming up, singer-songwriter and guitarist Richard Thompson talks about the early days of his great career. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.